Hey friends, hope you had a really nice weekend, spending it with friends and family, connecting to whatever it is that brings you meaning and purpose in this life. Today, I'm excited to share a great episode along with my co-host, Rudy McCormack, who you're familiar with, who I've had on the podcast several times. We got to sit down and interview the great Rainer Funk. If you don't know who that is, let me share with you his bio. Rainer Funk is the director of the Erich Fromm Institute in Tübingen, the co-director of the Erich Fromm Study Center at the International Psychoanalytic University in Berlin, and a practicing psychoanalyst based in Tübingen, Germany. Rainer Funk is Erich Fromm's sole literary executor, and among his publications are the 10-volume German edition of Erich Fromm Collected Works. Rainer is also the author of the great introduction to the life and work of Erich Fromm entitled Life Itself is an Art. Here's just a quick blurb from the great Noam Chomsky on Rainer's book. To borrow a phrase from Rainer Funk's penetrating study, it is an exhilarating experience to follow the course of Erich Fromm's thinking. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. We explore everything from the first time that Rainer Funk met Erich Fromm when he was a doctoral student, from really getting into some of Fromm's thinking and life when he spent time in Mexico, to exploring Fromm's very nuanced approach to religion, to so much more. This is a really thought-provoking and interesting conversation, and I think you're going to get a lot out of it. I know that I sure did. I can't wait to share it with you and for you to share it with those who might benefit from it. As always, I want to encourage you to share this with anyone who might benefit from it, and as always, continue the conversation. So Rainer, it is such a delight to be sitting here, you know, really across the world on Zoom, to have this chance to speak to someone who knew Fromm so well, and yeah, who's had such a tremendous impact like you have. I'm just sort of honored and humbled, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So thank you for your time and your presence with us today.
Okay, you're welcome. I'm delighted to do it.
Yeah, and Rudy, as always, it's great to have you as well as a co-host, and I'm excited to see where we're going to go with this. Where I would love to start this conversation, Rainer, is by just asking you to tell us the story of how you first met Erich Fromm, because I think there's a lot there that you could explore with us.
Okay, I can try to do it. Now, it's more than 50 years ago that I, for the first time, met Fromm in 1972 at the 1st of September. That is to speak, let's just say, 33 years after the Germans went in Poland and started the Second World War. And I met in person for the first time a Jewish scientist, Erich Fromm. So it was, in a way, a special day when I met him the first day. I got the knowledge, got a note that he is not only staying in New York and Guanavaca and Mexico, but since some years also in Locarno in Switzerland. And so I wrote to him because I started to write a dissertation thesis on the question how Fromm foundates his humanistic ethics. And his humanistic ethics, that means an ethics which is not constructed with a transcendent or transcendental entity. It relies only to humans and how he can make this. So that was the topic of my dissertation. And of course, I had a lot of questions, and so I wrote to him, and he immediately invited me to call him up and again, because he just had a flu in the middle of summer. Nevertheless, so I called him up 14 days later, and he immediately said, "Can you come tomorrow?" So I went with the car to Locarno. It's about 400 kilometers or 250 miles from Tübingen near Stuttgart, where I'm living, to Locarno. And I was his guest for 3 days in a hotel, and he invited me to come to him. And I really I really encountered with a person who was totally interested in my questions and in what I think, and not only what I think, but also what I feel. So that was a very special way of contacting another person, not so much be focused on the question how intellectual and sophisticated my ideas are, but what are my inner interests, what are my emotional interests. And that was very peculiar and also very convincing for me, because by this I had the impression and felt that he really was interested in what I am doing and what are my special interests in his work. So that was the first start when I met him in 1972.
Oh, that's great. You know, and I was just reading through, I think it's your first chapter this morning on life itself is an art. And you said that from the beginning, was more interested in learning about your heart than your head. And I thought that was a really interesting way to put that. I really resonated with that.
Yeah, that really was, for me, it was very... a new experience, because I met a lot of very famous persons. I first studied theology, Catholic theology, and I was a student of Hans Küng and of Ratzinger, the later Pope, and so on. And these people were intellectual, very fit, and very interesting. But if you look at their own lives and how they, their own persons, you always had the impression what they are teaching is a very different point in regard to what they are personally living. Mm. And from, I had the first time the experience of a very prominent person who really tries to live what he is teaching in his books. And that was very convincing for me and very stimulating. I went home and wrote on 200 pages, wrote down my understanding of Fromm's concept of from social psychology and from concept of character and social character, and sent it back to him, this 200 pages. He really read it and was very fascinated, so he invited me again. And by this way, by this contacts, it happened. When Fromm made together with his wife, Annis, the decision in autumn and fall 1973 not to go back to Guernavaca anymore, but to stay in Locarno, he was searching for an assistant, for a person who collaborated with him, because he started, in this year, he started to write a book on Karl Marx and Meister Eckhart, which finally came out as The Book to Have or to Be. Mm. And for this book, he wanted a person, a collaborator who was familiar, or who is familiar with all the traditions, philosophical and theological and religious traditions, and has an idea of medieval thoughts and mysticism and so on. And in those times, I really was quite familiar with all these questions from my theological background. And so he asked me whether I could come and work with him as an assistant. So I went to Locarno in fall 1974 and stayed there until 1975, and then I came from Tübingen to Locarno more or less every 4 weeks just to do what he wanted me to do and to collaborate, read manuscripts and criticize this and that, what he has written, and finally to edit a German omnibus edition, collected works, which made me more and more familiar with the whole work, with all writings of Fromm. So sometimes Fromm called me up and said, oh, Mr. Funk, do you know, did I ever write anything about this or that topic? You should know it, because he had an idea of his books, but not all this very many smaller papers he did. He had written in the 30s and 40s. So I could say, yes, you did so. And, oh, please, could you send it the manuscript if you have collected it? So that was the way I got more and more familiar, particularly with this job of editing this collected works of Fromm in German, in German language. And and that was finally the reason why Fromm then changed his last will and brought me in as his literary executor. That is to say, Fromm made a splitting between the heirs that get the money from the royalties and so on the one side, and the literary executor who has to make the decisions about his copyrights, his book rights, I became not an heir, but the literary executor, so I could edit all this material. And until today, I sign the contracts of publishers in regard to Fromm titles. So I came by this being so familiar with his work in those years, and particularly in connection with the German edition of the German collected works, I became this administrator of his rights and his literary estate by his last will. So that was the way I got more and more closer in all this Frommian things, and I am still going on in this up to today, you see, 50 years now.
Oh, that's so great. That's so helpful. Yeah, Rudy, do you want to jump in? I mean, I don't know if there's something that you're kind of thinking about that you want to ask Rainer. I've got a lot of questions, so I just want to make sure that...
There is. I just feel like 1 hour is not enough. 1 hour is not enough. Dr. Funk, I have a couple questions just in the way that I've been, in the way that you were talking about certain aspects of Fromm. And I think one of the things that I want to get into is probably when he wrote the book on the Mexican village. Did he explain to you, or did he talk to you about why he chose to deviate from Freud specifically after he wrote that book, or from the research he was doing in the Mexican village that showed him that, you know, drives weren't the deciding factor of you know, human choices, but really it's about these, you know, the characterology that he really starts to develop when he starts writing this book, or he does the research on this, and he moves away from these instinctual drives, and he starts to talk about more of like culture itself, right? As the, I guess the best way to do it is like this, the clothes we're really wearing that kind of manifest the kinds of actions and values we tend to identify with, right? Or we tend to associate with. So I'd love for you to riff on that if you can.
I think this empirical study on the Mexican village was in a way a late proof for his revised or for his revision of the Freudian instinct or drive theory. Actually, the change in the paradigm to have a frame of reference in regard to libido theoretical drive understanding, or as Fromm put it then, of a relational approach, where not the satisfaction of instinctual impulses is a decisive moment, but the need for being related to reality, to oneself, to other people, and to a social group. So this need for relatedness is the real the point from which we are driven, and from which all human and all psychic phenomena can much better be explained than by an instinct theory. This change of paradigm happened in the middle of the 30s already. So, and it was very traumatic. Now, Fromm came in 1934 to the United States to escape National Socialism and Hitler. Fromm was in the years between 1931 and 1934. He lived in Switzerland because he suffered a lung tuberculosis. And in those times, there were no real medications to cope with this illness. So it took a long time, but Fromm could never go back to Germany after the rise of Hitler in January 1933. And so he directly escaped from Switzerland to New York. And there he very soon got contact with Harris Tech Sullivan, the psychiatrist of the Washington School, and also with Margaret Mead and Ruth Benedict, this anthropologist. And this was a very fruitful cooperation from started there, because Sullivan had the idea as a psychiatrist, if you look to the very severe psychiatric illnesses, these are all illnesses where the relation to reality, to oneself, to others, are totally worse. So if these are the most severe illnesses of the human psyche, then it seems that the question of being related is the most crucial question for human beings. That was the background for that Fromm rethought his own ideas of his combining society and individual by an own social psychological method, which he did in the Freudian frame of reference in 1932 in the Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, this very famous journal of the Frankfurt School. But then he revised his own approach and his own social psychological idea, but unfortunately the colleagues of the Frankfurt School rejected this new idea of Fromm, and they did not allow to publish this paper Fromm has written in 1936-37. To publish it in the Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung. And I think that was the first real disharmony which grew more and more in the years so from had to leave the Institute for Social Research and to go on in his way of looking at human beings as determined by a need for relatedness, and all psychic phenomena could be explained by ways of satisfying this human needs for being related. What Fromm could not see in those times that is that, of course, this being related to others, or as empirical research calls it, to be attached to others, is not a very specific human phenomenon. It is a phenomenon of many, many forms of life, particularly of the primates and so on. And Maurizio Cortina, one of the researchers on Fromm in the United States, stresses this point, and I think he is right in this regard. Nevertheless, for Fromm in those years, it was a very important insight that humans are not, or the psychic phenomena are not an impact of a drive dynamics, of an intrinsic drive dynamics, but of an intrinsic need to be related and to satisfy this ways of relatedness. And Fromm wrote two big empirical research projects. The first was very early in 1930, the very first psychoanalytic empirical research which was ever done was done by Fromm in Germany on the authoritarian character. Yeah. Or Adorno then did the authoritarian personality. And that was the first empirical research. The second was done in Mexico. But as you see, that was published in 1970. It was, I think it was finished about in 65, 66, and it took a long time until the publication really was prepared, and the cooperation was insofar a little bit complicated because Fromm suffered a first heart attack in December of 1966. Mm. And from this on, he was for 2 years more or less not able really to follow up his projects. And therefore, it took quite long until this Mexican research, empirical research, was published together with Michael Makoubi.
Yeah. Wow. I have so many questions I have, but I'm just curious, Rudy, since you asked that last one, is there anything you want to follow up with before I jump into the next one?
I hope I don't take up too much time away from you, Kiki.
No, it's fine, man. I'm wanting to learn from you too.
Yeah, thank you so much. Dr. Funk, I'm also just really, really curious because when I was doing my dissertation, I always wondered, because I'm a Spanish speaker myself, and I know Fromm lived a good portion of his life with one of his wives in Mexico. I think from what I read in The Art of Loving is that she was sick and he had to be in a specific part of Mexico for her sickness. And one of the things I kind of always wondered was, did Fromm have a lasting impact in Mexico? Did he have some kind of center or, you know, a psychoanalytic center or something that he did? Because I don't know if he himself wrote in Spanish or maybe he did. But those are some of the things I like to get more clarity on, just because I want to do further research in the more Spanish-speaking side of Fromm, just so that I can uncover a little more on that. And then just so that myself, I can see more relatedness in Fromm with me as I also speak Spanish. And I'd love to, you know, just to be able to really shine a light on the more Spanish-speaking side of Fromm and the more the aspects that he lived in Mexico and who he influenced, right, in Mexico, for example.
Now, as you indicated, Fromm, together with his second wife, Fanny, went to Mexico in 1950 due to a very painful arthritic illness of Hanny. And the climate of Mexico brought some relief for Hanny, and that was the main reason that he moved to Mexico. But very early in 1951, he got an offer of the UNAM, of the biggest Mexican University of Mexico City. And he got an offer to train for a training of psychiatrists to become psychoanalysts. So far, psychoanalysis played no real role in Mexico in those years. So far from, it was at the same time very seductive to teach psychoanalysis at this university, and by this to introduce his understanding, his relational understanding of psychoanalysis in Mexico. I think that was one reason why Fromm also stayed in Mexico after his second wife, Hanny, died in June of 1952. He had started his course there. Nevertheless, Fromm always went from Mexico to New York and to other cities. There are some recordings he needed to do, how many times he spent in the United States, because in those years, in the 50s, in the McCarthy, Joseph McCarthy era, there was a problem to can keep your citizenship as an American if you are living outside of America. So Fromm had to report and make recordings how many times and weeks and months he is really staying in the United States and in Mexico. And if these countings, you can see he was at least 4, 5, 6 months a year in the United States, officially living in Mexico and Guernavaca. And I also think it was for Fromm this getting in contact with the Mexican culture, particularly with the indigene culture, not in the Spanish culture, but in the indigene, that was most attractive for him. And particularly by comparing it with the American way of life and culture, you see. So all this societal and cultural questions always were attractive for Fromm. And I think that was also a point why he liked to stay in Mexico. And he started to learn Spanish, and he finally gave seminars and lectures in Spanish. Nevertheless, his main publications always were written in English. All the books are from Escape from Freedom on in 1941 were written in English. Mm-hmm. But his smaller papers he also wrote in Spanish, and his Spanish improved more and more the more practice he had. What Fromm really was fascinated was this different culture, and of course, wonderful climate there. If I would not be 80, I would change to live in Morelos or in Guernavaca with this wonderful weather situation. Why not? It's really very attractive there. So there were many points, but I think the main point was that he built up the psychoanalytic movement and institute, and at the same time he was engaged in politics of the United States and made a lot of seminars, and still went to the William Allison White Institute in New York and gave seminars and lectures and supervised students and so on. So he was living here and there, actually, in those years. But he liked this Mexican culture, the Mexican climate, the Mexican people. He really liked it.
Is there a point of contact or still a functioning center in Mexico that still has homage to Fromm, or that's not?
Oh yes. In 60 years ago from today, or from last year, that is to say, in 1963, an old building of the Mexican Psychoanalytic Institute was established, established by Fromm, this Frommian Psychoanalytic Institute is still working there. There is now a new president or director, Amparo Espinosa, who made a refurnishing of the whole building, spent a lot of money to make this possible, and brings it back to a Frommian center. So I cooperated for this also, and sent pictures and material to exhibit there, and to make these memorials of Fromm there. So this institute is still working and is still a training institute there. I think there is also a strong Mexican tradition and the Frommian reception as well in the clinical as in the social psychological. There was still a Seminario Social Psicoanalítico, which were established by Salvador Millán and Sonia Kochman de Millán, who are still alive and who are still familiar with the Seminario. That is to say, this application of psychoanalysis to social groups and in research and is still practiced there by this, particularly by this Seminario Social Psicoanalítico in Mexico.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
for that.
No, that's so helpful. Okay, yeah. So I have a question for you, Dr. Funk, especially since you came from the world of academic theology and maybe we could say religion. I'm always curious how Erich Fromm held the tension between appreciating religious and maybe theological thought, but also pointing out some of the dangers maybe of institutional religion. And I'm curious if you could speak to that, how you would frame Fromm's understanding of religion. I know that's a very broad question, but I think you're probably someone who could speak to that.
Now, you must consider that Fromm came from a very Orthodox, practicing Orthodox Jewish religion, religious world. He was the only child. His grandfather and grand-grandfather was very famous. They are very, very famous Talmudists and Jewish theologians there. And Fromm himself first wanted to become a Talmudist. After his finishing school, he nevertheless then started with two semesters of Jura, and then he went to Heidelberg to study their sociology. But the background of Fromm is a very religious background. And when he came then in 1923 in contact with psychoanalysis with his later first wife, Frieda Reichmann, who also was a psychoanalyst and trained analyst, Fromm was infected by this psychoanalytic idea, and this way of looking at your inner attachments to your parents, I think this led in Fromm to a harsh reaction against his father. Mm. When in 1926, Frieda Reichmann and Erich Fromm, both at Pesach, at the Jewish Easter, they did not eat matzen, but a normal bread. Mm. That is to say, they wanted to get rid of all this Jewish religious practice. So people who knew Fromm in those years witnessed him as a very, very religious critical thinker. So he got rid of his mother or father religion, however you want to coin it, from his Jewish background, but all his Jewish socialization, all his thinking, all his idea of man, his future, and so on, this still was going on in Fromm until the last days of his life in the 1980s. So Fromm never practiced any official religion. He was very enthusiastic of some mystical religion, but the idea that a person can speak to God in a prayer or so, that's far from pure idolatric practice. So in this respect, he is totally critical of religion. Religion always want to get control over God by their rituals and by their prayers and by their, particularly by their dogmatic formulations and so on. So in this regard, Fromm is totally critical of religion. On the other side, when Fromm reflected his own relational approach to psychoanalysis, that is to say, if he reflected the question of to what human beings have to be related, not only to reality, to other people, to social group or to oneself, but also to a frame of orientation and an object of devotion. That is also an existential need for human beings. So he laid the basis for what we call religion, you see. Or, not only religion, but also philosophy, science, or whatever, a frame of orientation. And of course, religion over all these many centuries built up a frame of orientation, a special view of world and how world came up and will go on and so on. So religion, every human being needs such a frame of orientation, and therefore religion or the religious attitude is a very human attitude for Fromm, or religiosity is an important dimension of human beings, or we would maybe say today not religiosity, but spirituality.
Okay.
And in this respect, you can say Fromm is the most critical person of religion on the one side, and on the other side, he laid the foundation for a religious dimension of human beings. But he always was critical of all institutionalized forms of religion. And therefore, he was attracted by mysticism, particularly by Meister Eckhart, where Meister Eckhart says, I have to pray to God that God made me get rid of any concept of God.
Yeah.
So this idea of mysticism that was Fromm's, where Fromm still see that is a way of religious practice which he can accept because there is absolutely no control over God in terms, concepts, or whatever. You have to give up all ideas, all concepts of God. Then you have a chance to discover this spiritual or religious experience and dimension. That is from religiosity.
That's great. Okay. So I have just one maybe other question, Rudy, but unless you want to jump in a second. In terms of what you were saying, I've seen at several levels that he refers to himself as a non-theist instead of an atheist. And I'm wondering if there's an actual distinction between those two or if it was just his preferred language for that.
No, that is a very important distinction between a non-theist and an atheist. But that is a very typical psychoanalytic distinction. Look, as long as you have to fight against religion in form of an atheism, or you have to fight against any concept of God, as long as you do this, you are still in contact with this being against, and you have not reached the point where you can, so to speak, believe by not believing. That is to say, where the question of God plays no role anymore for you, and you have not to fight against. Look, you have the same problem on a very different level or dimension. Today we are all fighting against this right or left extremisms. As long as we are fighting against, we do not really cope with the problem. We have not come to a position where we have not to fight anymore. And this also holds true particularly in religious aspects. And therefore, Fromm always says, as long as people have to confess their atheism, they are not really freed from the question of God. And only if it makes no difference whether there is a God or no God, then as long as it makes no difference, you are not on this point from once to come, that one is not against, but you are free to find a way without a question of God. So that is Fromm's position there, and therefore he speaks of non-theism instead of atheism.
Oh, that's great. That's so helpful for me. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, I was really thinking, I mean, it probably also applies to politics as well, because it appears like our politics looks very much like this idea of identifying as atheist, in the sense that when you're fighting against something, right, whether it's left or right, you know, political ideologies, like, for example, in the United States, where the politics is always against Trump, for example, right? Like when the left is looking at how do we identify ourselves, it's against, well, we're not the other person, so let's keep that at bay. But something I think, you know, that you really pointed out, Dr. Funk, was when you're fighting against something, it's almost like you don't really get to express your authenticity, or you don't get to explore that level of freedom that you're allowed to have as a person, so that you can explore your imagination. And I do think that there's a correlation between our defunct imagination and our political spheres and what's available to us to choose from, and this idea of fighting against something. I really do think that, you know, from putting it that way, makes me think that we are sick, like our society is sick, and it's showing up in this fighting against something that doesn't allow us to imagine a better society, a better world, right? A radical reform, right? As Fromm would want to consider it, right?
We need all our energy to be against something instead of for. That's the same problem as escape from freedom and to be able for freedom, you see. As long as you have to fight against all things which constrain, against all constraints, you are not free for freedom there. And that holds true particularly in this. Now, look, that is indeed, it is a very important question today, particularly from a more psychological and psychoanalytic point of view. What's going on? Is it really what we see today is on all levels, always this, there is only an either or neither nor, and there is not as well as, you see. And that is a very typical narcissistic and group narcissistic attitude, that you know only this or that. There is no in between or no nothing beyond this alternative there. And that is, I think that's an indication for a deep form of alienation in our times, particularly in politics. And it's the same holds true for all this right populistic attitudes. There is, in my understanding, a narcissistic dynamic going on in this. And as long as we understand it as a renaissance of authoritarianism, I think we have not understood what is going on in the people. And this, we have make America great again. That is a point. You see, greatness. Have a great day. In most emails I get from American people, have a great week. It all must be great. You see, why is this the way we communicate in greatness or always? So I think we have to discover this either or dynamic and this thinking in superlatives and always in and not in between and in something what is mediocre, you see, and what is gray and not only white and black, you see. And you know, let's see what's going on in the politics, but it I think if Fromm would live today, he had great problems to cope with the situation anymore. It gets worse and worse there.
Yeah. So that actually leads me, because I know Dr. Funk, you've taken Fromm's work and you've kind of built on it. You've extended it with something like the ego orientation, which maybe we can get to, but I'm kind of curious from your perspective, having known him so well and studied his work so deeply, do you think there's something that he missed or that he just wasn't aware of that we are now facing in the 21st century that you wish he could be around to maybe think through differently?
Mm, that's a good point.
No, I think there are two questions. The one question is, are there aspects in Fromm's thinking and in Fromm's work and in Fromm's thoughts which may be one-sided? Or, I think there are some of this. in regard, now Fromm was a very pioneer in gender questions, nevertheless. For instance, he thought about homosexuality as a form of not really developed ability to love. So he had the classical Freudian position still. So in gender questions, he was a pioneer. On the other side, he had, he did not see things we are much more aware of today. So I think there can be, one could tell some things more in this regard. But what you also indicated with your question is there are developments in our society which Fromm could not have seen in his times, that what will come up. And that was my question after I really understood was Fromm, with the Frommian social psychological approach and his concept of social character, in the sense that the requirements of living together and of economic and social and societal requirements have an inner representation in each individual that Fromm called the social character formation. So I want to do that what society wants me to do, but I do it with passionate or with passion. I strive for this, what is necessary for this society. So he could exemplify this for the authoritarian character and very, very well also for the marketing orientation, a marketing character, which in my understanding is still the strongest and most dominant social character orientation today. On the other side, I thought about the question, what's with the digital revolution? There is such a new development now where we can enact reality, virtualize reality, simulate reality, simulate our own person, simulate our own thinking. So I have no idea who I am really, because I am more and more a simulated person and so on. So that must be a different way. So if digital technology allows us to recreate reality in a very new and different way, this experiences will be internalized in an own striving. I want, in a self-determined way, to establish reality, relationship, my own person, and so on. And this new social character orientation, I called 20 years ago when I published it for the first time in German, I called it the Ich-Orientierung, the ego-oriented orientation. If I would have to say it or to term it, to coin it today, I would say it is a self-determined character, because I cannot cope with any constraints with what other people say and want me to do. I want to be self-determined or participate in a reality in a self-determined way, which is in a reality which is reconstructed, which is reinvented according to the possibilities we have today. So what I want to say, I tried to make or to describe with this self-determined or ego-oriented character, social character orientation, this one, what I think it's going up. The other day, I read a little bit more in Peterson's 12 rules. if you see it from this ego-oriented person here, it's no other. It's exactly this social character type is fostered here, and is said that is a normality of today. In a religious way, it is done by, or in a psychological and religious way, and he has so many followers all over the world and so on. So that's a very good example, particularly for this new social character. And what was a great idea of Fromm was to develop a method and a theory how we can find out what is going on a macro-social dimension, what is going on in our time, if we look what are the real innovative developments in technique, in economics, in production techniques, and so on, and how this is reflected in my own strivings. That Fromm had done it for the authoritarian, for the marketing, and I tried it here for the digital revolution time, and found that this self-determination is the basic strivings. If you consider all these different ways, you can summarize it. All people have one deep basic striving to be self-determined. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to say, who am I and how I should live and so on. I want to be self-determined. That was the unfortunately, the two books I have written about this were never published and never translated to English, because that's a point we should discuss on our own. It's so difficult for a non-United States citizen to convince an American publisher that a person outside of America has written an interesting you mentioned this introduction I have written to Fromm, Life Itself is an Art, where yes. I introduced. I paid for the translation $6,000, and then Bloomsbury was able to say, okay, we will publish it.
Wow. Well, I'm so glad you did that, because it's a great book.
Yeah, we got to experience it, yeah.
So I know I've kind of come to the end of some of the questions that I had for you, Dr. Funk. I'm wondering, Rudy, if there's something else that you want to ask, and definitely, Dr. Funk, if there's something you kind of want to end on in terms of just introducing more and more people to the life and the work of Erich Fromm, I would love to give you a chance to do that kind of as we come to an end.
Yeah, Dr. Funk, I'll just add a little bit to what you were saying about Fromm and what you were just addressing, is that I think one of the, in my own experience, as I wrestled with Fromm, was that there's a non-attachment to his theorizing, which I really find interesting, because you juxtapose Fromm with Peterson, and of course you're 100% right that Peterson is a very egoic character, right? There's definitely a sense of narcissism in his writings. But in Fromm, one of the things that I love about him, and Man for Himself specifically, when he's really going into detail on the aspects and the logic of what it means to be human, one of the things that I always found interesting was his way of describing human nature. Right, which I think we sometimes take for granted, and we don't really focus on that. But really, he's giving you a really interesting bird's eye view of affect, right? Bird's eye view of all the existential elements of what it means to be human. And he's basically telling you, we're all those things. We are not just one thing, like Jordan Peterson wants us to think, right? That if we want to be selfish, if we want to be narcissistic, we have the capacity for that, but we also have the capacity for compassion. We have the capacity for kindness. And we forget that the character style, right, or the character orientation that's in vogue. Yep. It's only the character orientation that the specific society in which you're in it is rewarding. And that's actually, I think, one of the dispelling effects of From that really gives you a bigger and larger picture of what it means to exist in the world and what it means to be human and all the capacities that we actually have without saying we're this or that, right? Going back to the black and white, this either or, neither nor perspective. And, you know, I just want to say, like, that's something we take or we don't really talk about, and it's not taken for granted. I don't see someone like Jordan. I don't know how Jordan Peterson would react to a kind of understanding in that sense, right? But then also just to, I guess, just to close it off with me, I wonder if you could tell me that maybe all the readings that I've engaged in with From as I'm reading him throughout his books, from the way you were talking about it, it almost sounds like what From was in his books and the way he was talking about not just the macro scale, but also the individual, there's also aspects of having conversations with him. Because I always felt like I was having a conversation with From every time I read him. And it almost felt like I knew him more as I knew more of his ideas, right? And then the more I engage with From, the more of a Fromian scholar I become, I always feel like from the way you spoke about him, it feels like I know, you know, just a little bit more of From and his personality and who he was as a person from the way you described him. And I just, that makes me feel warm inside to know that I, you know, in a way got to know From, and, you know, he has no idea that he's engaging with people in the 21st century and having a personal relationship with them.
Now, there are a lot of questions included in what you said. I'm not to enlarge it too much. I witnessed the way From wrote the book To Have or To Be. And that was, for me, it was most interesting. He read a lot. From was an obsessional reader, one must say. He read many, many books before he started to write. And he always first looked, what did Freud write about this? And what said the philosophers and so on. Or Meister Eckhart, or the literature about Meister Eckhart. And then he started to write down a chapter. And the secretary had to type it. He wrote it by his pencil, and the secretary had to to type it. And then I got a copy just to make some comments on it. And then I came 2 days later again to make my comments to it. He said, very often he said, oh, in the meantime, I had the feeling it's not really that what I experience from my inner. I rewrote this chapter, and you will give it to you afterwards then again. What I want to say is From did not make birthes of his head, you see. He wanted to express things he thought about, but combine it with his own experiences. Mm. And it has to fit to his own awareness, to his own conceptualizations, and so on. And I think that is a way why From's writings are so interesting, because they are not sophisticated, but they are very heart-oriented, yes. One could say. And I think that is typical for From, and particularly the Art of Loving and To Have or To Be, the most bestsellers of From, are those books where not an intellectual, but a person who experiences problems and fantasies and who experiences and want to bring these experiences to paper and publish it. I think that is the real point. Why from, in so many respects, is not only of historical interest, where he could see things which will happen 20 years later or so. He had a feeling for what is going on. And on the one side, and on the other side, it is a real authentic way of writing, which is not intellectual, not an intellectual production, but a personal production, if one wants to describe it in that way. And I think that is a point which, in the last analysis, is convincing of Rom. Not so much not at all his abstractifications, because Fromm had great problems with abstract thinking. Mm. It has to be always close to the person, close to the feelings, close to my experience, and not only a head product or a brain contact, product. And this, I think, is one point of the many questions you ask, but I think that is one from which we can explain why Fromm is interesting also for us now, 43 years after his death. You see, so it still has Fromm is topical in a way, because he made no brain birthes, you see, but heart birthes.
Okay. Yeah. What I love about it is I think the best word to describe it, not I was thinking about it as you were saying, is just that there's like a beautiful vulnerability to Fromm writing. Yeah. And I think that's what captures, because you're right, like there's a mixture between feeling and rationality. And I love how, you know, the dancing around that and then being able to weave a cocktail into books or into thought is an incredible feat of vulnerability and authenticity to be able to do that. And I definitely want to mirror, you know, those principles and ways of being in my own writing as well, as if I can, right? Like it's incredible. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it. So that was great. I think that may be a good place to end. I just want to thank you again, Dr. Funk, for your time and, you know, staying up a little bit later. And yeah, this has been a great conversation. I'm really excited to listen to it again and just to kind of push it out into the world so that more and more people can get in contact with the life and writings of Erich Fromm. So thank you.
Incredible. Thank you.
Oh, I like it to do it. Thank you. That's all.